Okay, thank you very much, and I'm delighted to be at the meetings this year and talking about a subject near and dear to my heart, which is maize production by indigenous farmers. And I'm very interested in pre-Columbian agriculture. Most of the work I've done previously has been amongst the Haudenosaunee in the Northeast. But I'm going to look today at Mississippian agriculture, and particularly maize productivity related to soil information. Anthropologists, archaeologists, and historians have very specific ways that they have looked at relationships between potential agricultural productivity and soil. And they use things like landscape position, uplands versus floodplains, and generally think that the floodplains are going to be more productive or more agriculturally used. They often talk about method of deposition of soils, whether it's alluvial or fluvial or loess. They often talk about texture, heavy versus light. The thinking has often been that farmers with stone tools could only work light textured soils. They also look at things like drainage. Moderately well drained soils are optimal. Soil fertility, they're looking at parent material, pH, things like that. And oftentimes you'll see anthropologists and archaeologists refer to soil series in a particular location, noting that some are more productive than others. But as a soil scientist, this is not how I generally look at soils. And so it's been a little frustrating to me when I've looked at the work of anthropologists and archaeologists interested in maize production in a lot of these Mississippian sites, because we're talking different languages. As a soil scientist, I look first at soil taxonomy. And we differentiate soils according to quantifiable characteristics that are either measured in the field or in the lab. And these are things like soil organic matter, texture, drainage, cation exchange capacity, the types of clay minerals. And in particular, things like the method of deposition, landscape position, parent material are not usually useful to soil scientists for grouping soils. And we know that soil series names are only valuable locally. They don't translate across large regional areas. So as a soil scientist, one of the first things I do when trying to assess the agricultural potential of an area is to look at soil taxonomy, and particularly soil orders. And we have 12 of them based on the presence or absence of diagnostic horizons. The things that are most interesting for farmers, or the soil orders most important, tend to be mollisols and alfisols. These are our most highly productive soils in the United States. Altisols, the mollisols here are these green ones here, and the alfisols are these kind of teal color. And then these golden ones are altisols, and these are infertile soils, right? So if you just tell me that it's a mollisol or an alfisol or an altisol, I have a little bit of an idea of what its agricultural potential might be. So the mollisols are generally the most productive because they have this mollic epipedon, they have high soil organic matter, they have high base status. Alfisols very similar to the mollisols, but not quite as good. And altisols generally unproductive unless they're fertilized and lined. But the thing here is that not all mollisols or alfisols will be great agricultural soils because of local conditions. So just because you have a mollisol or an alfisol doesn't mean that you're going to grow great corn, right? So another way that soil scientists look at this is that we designate certain areas or certain soils as prime farmland. And this is great. This is a map that shows prime farmland in the United States, and each one of these little dots, I think, represents 25,000 acres of prime farmland. This is great, but the people that designate prime farmland are soil scientists within each state. So they identify the prime farmland in their state. And so a person identifying prime farmland, a soil scientist in North Carolina, likely uses a very different standard than somebody in Iowa. So it's very hard to translate across wider regions. So one of the things that soil scientists have done recently, the NRCS folks, has been to develop crop commodity indices, productivity indices. And they do these for four major crops. And luckily, one of them is maize. And they develop these models that integrate soil, plant, and climatic characteristics to predict crop yields on specific soils. It's like a really very, very useful indices because it allows us to compare the productivity of soils across the entire continental United States. What it doesn't include is information or data or criteria that would affect productivity of maize on a yearly basis, right? So we're looking at things that will affect the productivity that allows people in, for example, in Florida to look at the potential of their of a particular soil there with someone maybe working in Montana. And so that you have this national way of indicating potential and comparative productivity. And they involve very complex algorithms that look at both soil characteristics and growth models for maize. So we used these indices and we combined it with soil survey data from NRCS, the Natural Resource Conservation, to assess potential maize productivity at 28 Mississippian site complexes. So we chose these. I'm not an expert in Mississippian cultured Mississippian archaeology, so we simply looked at the sites that seemed to be most commonly used, studied, recognized by archaeologists. We got all of this data that matched these sites, and then we used GIS software to integrate all of this data and pulled in the maize productivity, these maize productivity indices, and then divided the maize productivity indices into four categories. Very low, basically meaning no one would ever try to grow corn there. Low, meaning that you won't get great yields. Moderate, pretty good. And high, excellent corn growing areas. So these are the sites that we used. You can see all up and down the kind of, these were sites that would be, I think, referred to as Middle Mississippian, right? And so we looked at all of these. We drew circles around each of them, basically 20,000 hectares, and then started looking at the maize productivity indices. So when we drew the circles around these, in contemporary days, sometimes lots of these sites are, you know, there's water there or they're urban areas, and so you don't have 20,000 hectares. In some of the sites, they overlapped, and so we drew irregular, circles. So what you have here on the right-hand side of these are the total number of hectares in each one of these. We also divided them geographically into four areas: the Ohio River Basin, the Central Tennessee, the Lower Mississippi, the Upper Mississippi, and then one group that didn't fit in any of these but contained very important sites, Cahokia. We had a Cahokia uplands because there are a lot of sites that are east of the Cahokia itself up in the upland or the bluffs, Dixon, which is also north, and then Moundsville, which is located much farther south. So let me show you some of the results of this. If we just look at maize productivity across all of the sites, you can see we have large amounts that would be classified as very low. The largest category is actually low. But then if you look at the combination between the moderate and high, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of hectares that are within relatively close access to these various sites. So let's look at them in a little bit more. First at the Cahokia, Dixon, and Moundville. What stands out right away is the Cahokia uplands are just absolutely mind-boggling amounts of highly productive agricultural soils or maize soils. And Cahokia itself also has fairly large amounts of that, as does the Dixon Mounds. But notice Moundville. Oh, sorry, went the wrong way on that. Moundville, hardly any moderate or highly productive soils. Almost all of Moundville is in the low productive soils. If we look at the Ohio River sites, very large amounts at Angel, at Ashworth Complex, at the Kincaid Complex, and at the Twin Complex, all have very large amounts of moderate and highly productive soils, but also fairly large amounts, too, of some of the not so great soils. If we go down to the upper Mississippian sites, Parkins is distinct in having mostly low, but Adams and a couple of the others, Chukalisa, Murphy, and Nodena, all have significant amounts of moderately productive soils. In central Tennessee, much larger amounts of moderate and low, not nearly the amount of the highly productive soils. And the lower Mississippi, all of a sudden we're seeing very large amounts of the least productive at Emerald, Holly Basin, Natchez. Not as much of the highly productive and moderate, and lots of the what we would call low. If we look at this over the map, you begin to see a pattern. Most of the highly productive soils and the moderately productive soils are found in the more northern portion of the continent, which makes perfect sense. These are where most of our mollisols and alfisols are. But as you come down and you get down into these areas of Moundville, Jaketown, Holly Bluff, a bunch of these, we're getting lots more with the very low and low. And these are soils that are altisols primarily, right? Some of these are also vertisols, which are very troublesome agriculturally. All right, so what are some of the conclusions that we can draw from this? Well, the very first one is that Mississippian farmers had access to tens of thousands of hectares of moderately or highly productive soils. But that within that, the potential for maize production varies tremendously across these sites. And generally, the sites located in the northern areas, such as Illinois, Indiana, and Tennessee, had much more productive soils than those located farther south in Mississippi and Alabama. Cahokia and the Cahokia uplands are distinctive in the enormous amounts of highly productive soils that those farmers had access to. And so if you're thinking Cahokia and large populations, it suddenly makes a lot of sense about why they might have been able to support such large populations. But I want to emphasize that even sites with low amounts of high or moderately productive soils likely still had sufficient land to support modest populations with maize agriculture. So even if we're only talking about 1,500 acres of moderately productive soils, you can grow an awful lot of maize on 1,500 hectares of moderately productive land. There are a lot of implications to this work. First is that access to these highly productive soils indicates that most Mississippian farmers would not have practiced shifting cultivation or a Swidden-type cultivation or fallowing, because that's an agricultural strategy that's associated with infertile soils. So there would be no reason to be fallowing soils. The second thing is that using landscape position, uplands versus floodplains, calling soils alluvial, fluvial, loess, and using soil series is really not useful for determining or comparing agricultural potential of specific soils. Archaeologists, anthropologists need to be using contemporary soil science in order to make these kinds of judgments. The last thing is just talking about soil texture. If you read about Mississippian agriculture and farmers, almost every scholar will say that farmers using stone tools could only have used, only had made use of soils that were easily worked. In other words, light textured, or specifically that they could not have used prairie soils with dense root mats. And I would argue that soil texture alone would not constrain field selection. First, that the chert hoes were used to construct mounds. They were very effective at excavating millions of cubic yards of soil. Why would they be any less effective in preparing a field for maize agriculture? And there's a fair amount of recent research that suggests that this is indeed true. Second, that maize kernels are very large, and they don't require a finely prepared seed bed. So once the field was roughly worked with a chert hoe, it would be relatively easy to come back to it year after year. And what I would argue is that farmers are going to select soils based on their productive capacity, which includes multiple factors. It's not to say that soil texture wouldn't be important, but there are lots of other factors working jointly that would determine farmers' choice of particular fields.